Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, I'm Craig Parkinson, and this is the Two Shot Podcast. Pop the kettle on and let's dive in. How the devil are you? Yep, here we are. Almost at the end. How are we feeling? Good? Let's feel positive. So, can you hear that? That's the tide coming in. I've come for a walk on the beach. Not for any reasons of reflection or melancholy in any way. No, for a couple of reasons, actually. What were the couple of reasons? Well, the main reason is my guest this week lives by the seaside. It's the fantastic comedian, author now, and 8 out of 10 cats favourite, Mr. Joe Wilkinson. So we were messaging back and forth because we live not too far from each other. And we hadn't met at all, so there's just emails going back and forth, arranging times and dates and what have you. And I said to Joe, I said, how about if we start the podcast down by the beach and we record just before we go for a swim and then just after, and then we can head back to mine and get the kettle on and warm up. I thought that would be a lovely icebreaker. Yeah, that didn't happen. It had been quite a rough few days. And then, like today, it's absolutely beautiful. And that was my second reason to record outside, because for the rest of the week, I think it's going to be chucking it down. So I think we do speak about it on the podcast, though, about how it would have been quite a beautiful start to an episode, especially when we haven't met. So, Joe turned up early doors around my house, knocked on the front door, came in, and that was the first time we met. We got the kettle on, and we started talking. And honestly, I think this is going to be one of your favourite episodes. I think it's going to jump right into your top 10, if not your top 5. It certainly did for me. And it's lovely, as we're coming to an end, to have one of those episodes where you're kind of a little bit nervous, a bit on your guard, because you haven't met before. So who knows what's going to happen on either side. But luckily, it turned out to be completely joyful, and he's incredible company, as you're going to find out. Now, yes, you may know Joe as a stand-up. You may have seen him in 8 Out of 10 Cats. You may even have seen him in the brilliant comedy Him and Her for the BBC. But maybe you know him as a fantastic podcaster. Himself and David Earle host a show called Chatterbix. That's on 3 times a week. I highly recommend it. It's not your usual 2 comedians sat down talking drivel. I mean, well, there's the occasional drivel, as with all podcasts. But they very rarely talk about themselves that much. They have great guests. They go on little expeditions and record outside, which is lovely. So yeah, I highly, highly recommend Chatterbox with Joe and his comedy writing partner, David Earle. Well, as the sun sets here down on the beach in Brighton, I'll invite you into my house and let's together welcome Mr. Joe Wilkinson. You enjoy, and I'll see you at the end.
So how come you're putting the kibosh on it?
Do you want... let me just get in my chair. Do you want the truth? Or
yeah, I'd love the truth.
Do you want the press release? We can cut this out anyway. I feel it's such a saturated market now. And when... when I started, probably what, 6 years ago.
Oh wow! Right.
There was a fair few, but not like it is now. And I feel like you've had a good run,
right?
And maybe now it's time.
It's a bit of dignity and ending now as well, isn't it? You know, when it's becoming a bit of a sort of joke, isn't it? Someone starting a new podcast or a podcast or whatever. So if you sort of go, if you bow out now, you go, oh, it's very classy.
I think so. But when I made the decision, and me and my producer spoke about it, and we went, okay, let's do it. I couldn't record. I wanted to record an announcement to everybody saying this is what's going to happen. So I went down to the beach.
Oh, nice.
And I thought, I'll just be here on my own and I can walk by the beach because I find it very calming down there.
Yeah.
And that'll be... good place. And it was only when the words started coming out of my mouth, because I tried to script it and it just sounded like scripts. Sound natural at all. So I went down to the beach, thought this would be a nice place and I could just be on my own, and the words came out of my mouth, and then I started getting really emotional about it, going, oh my god, it's
6 years, isn't it?
It's real. It's happening.
Oh, shame. Well, you know, I get it though. I don't mean no shame, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
But I feel that when we were emailing for you to come on this, I thought I'd scared you at one point.
I wanted to swim.
By asking, because I thought I had this great idea of going, I'll meet Joe for the first time and we'll jump in the sea.
The thing is, I go for a swim on Christmas Day.
Mm.
I do swim a bit in the winter.
Yeah.
But the day you messaged me was like the cold, it was like -4. And I was like, I did a sea swim with Jen Brister couple of years ago in February on a similar day, and I genuinely thought I was going to die.
Yeah,
but it was her and a couple of her mates, and they were so hardened to it, it shocked me, because I got in and I was making the most ungodly noises and these three ladies were just swimming, and I was like, right, this is really bad, because I'm like half up my legs, like literally scream, people kind of not rushing over, but thinking there was something bad was happening.
And when I started in April, I think, this year, I'd never done it before.
Mm. Oh, you started in April, so that would have been bitter. Because that's the cold, all the winter's built up the cold of the sea. And,
But it was all ladies.
Yeah, they're hard.
Absolute nails.
Yeah. It's mad. There's a group, I can't remember, they've got a disparaging name of their own. I can't remember what they call themselves. But they're just in all year.
Yeah.
And as you say, there's no fuss. There's no... They're chatting. They're getting the water. They're still chatting.
Yeah.
There's no sort of like...
There's no change.
No, if you just could see their face, you wouldn't kind of be able to tell the point they sort of hit the water. Whereas me, when I'm shouting expletives and... And also, Jen's rule was... you had to be in for 3 minutes, otherwise it doesn't count.
Mm.
It's like, well, 3 minutes is a long time when you feel like people are stabbing you.
Well, I went in, I'd had, I think, about 4 weeks off. And
you need to build up your tolerance, don't you?
Yeah.
It dies very quickly.
And I went back in maybe about 4 or 5 weeks ago now with a group of guys, like a group of strangers that meet on a Sunday morning.
Oh, nice.
Straight down here.
I'll join
near the cafe.
Which cafe? The
Just before, the little one before Rockwater.
Oh, I know. Oh, yeah, sweet. It's called,
Lex's.
Yeah, it used to be called Spitfires or something.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
So we meet at the front of there and no one really knows each other.
Oh, that's nice.
My partner met somebody talking about it in the sauna, you know, the horse boxing.
Oh, on the front. Yeah.
And she went, oh, I think my partner might quite like it. She's told me about it. And I went, oh, yeah, that could be good. And it's all very nice, but they're all strangers. They're quite huggy.
Right.
To begin with. And I don't have a problem with it, but it was quite full on first time.
Well, I suppose it's quite a moment, isn't it, getting in the sea this time of year?
Yeah.
So there's a sort of I get the celebration of kind of, we did it. I guess skin on skin on a Sunday morning's a bit, yeah.
With the strangers, yeah. It's a bit full on.
Are you around for Christmas here?
Yeah.
Because we go down Christmas mornings and I'll send you the time. And we go, it's such a brilliant thing. I love it so much because, you know, we got little dots of friends. And not everyone's here, but everyone we know comes down, and myself included this year, there's so much trepidation, am I actually going to do it, you know? And then you kind of get swept up in it and everyone does it. But last year the wind was up and the waves were up, and it was like everyone got in, but it was like I remember seeing my friend's wife's legs in the air and she ended up upside down. She lost her top and her shoe. So it was a real in and out.
Yeah.
But it's great. I'll let you know.
I've already said to my partner, we're going down Christmas morning.
Love it.
Because everybody's back at the house this Christmas, but then we were going to go down because the you know, boys won't be coming down to the front.
No, not there.
But I've already planned on going, so yeah, we'll definitely be.
I think we go down. It's like, I think it's about 9:30 or something. It's such a lovely way to start Christmas Day. It's such a sweet, because it's, you know, it's really bonding, and everyone, you know, everyone's going to do it, and the whole thing's like an hour. You know, it sort of just doesn't take up much of the day, but it's just really sweet seeing everyone. And it's shocking how many people actually came.
Yeah, but it is a brilliant start to the day.
Oh, it's amazing.
Because when I was filming down here, sometimes if I had like a 6 o'clock pickup, I would walk down from where we are now down to the seafront, jump in the sea with all like the hard 60-year-old ladies, then dry myself off, and then
what an amazing start.
Well, it just sorted everything out because I thought, well, you know,
it's a cleanser, like, isn't it?
It's a total cleanser, but also, talk about starting the day off. It's like, well, if there's fires to put out at work, which there generally is, there's problems. There's always problems, unforeseen problems. It's like, I'm going to be in a better mindset to cope with everything.
It's not a cliche. It really does make a difference. And because I know people that, obviously, it's not as good, but they do been doing the cold shower thing every morning.
Mm.
I can't be bothered with that. I'd rather go in the sea.
But yeah, I'd sooner.
You've inspired me to do it. We should have done it. I'm annoyed.
Should have done it. Yeah. And also, it is a beautiful day.
Yeah.
It's really calm.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I think it is. Oh, because never mind. We'll do it on Christmas Day.
Yeah. But when I went back after a 4-week break, it was, I thought, if I'm going back in, I need the support of a group of strange men. they're not strangers.
So yeah.
I went in
stranger
with like
men.
12 of them. That was, so the support was there, but it was really crashy.
Yeah.
And I'd forgotten about sort of regulating my breathing, and this wave came up and knocked me right on my arse. Yeah. So I was in before I knew it.
That's a good way in, actually.
Yeah.
Me and my friend Danny did it a few years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago. It was teetering. I won't say full on winter, because it was like the summer was coming to an end. It was like a coldish day, but the sea hadn't quite chilled down. You know? So it's because September's the best month because you've had all the summer. So maybe October. We looked down the road and there was no one in. And we were like, oh, I don't know why that is. And the waves don't look as big until you get in, do they? And we got in, and I remember seeing my friend Danny like, looked like he was in a swirl, basically. And I saw him sort of go down a swirl and a sort of curve of wave go up over the top of him. I was like, we need to get out.
Yeah.
And then, But what happened was we sort of were like, that was mental. We shouldn't have done that. And I couldn't see any flags, but I think it was on a day where once it's out of season, they just go, don't go in unless you're insane. Yeah, use your common sense. But the thing was, we then kind of started people thinking it was okay to get in. So people getting smashed. Like one lady was just sort of like clattered in front of it, and we were like, well, I don't know how to stop this now. Like, it's not my place to say...
You've opened the floodgates.
Yeah, yeah. So everyone was getting...
Well, they're doing it. You're the benchmark.
Yeah. So, well, those two blokes survived it. Well, just about. We were in a swirl.
Joe, can I just check, is your light on that?
It's a purple light.
Purple light.
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Just wanted to check.
Yeah.
It's turned into a swimming podcast. Oh, yeah. You said about being a cliche before. I never thought I would be...
Oh, you've got to be down here.
Got to be, haven't
you? Yeah, yeah. People say to me all the time, "Oh, you're very bright, very bright." And I go, "Yeah, I'm fine with that."
That's exactly.
It. Yeah, it's not.
It's got to be an age thing having grown up in Blackpool by the seaside, I had such an aversion to seaside towns.
Oh, really? Oh, really?
But like all I saw was the dark underbelly.
Right, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because my
wife's from Ventnor on the Isle of Wight, and she loves the sea, but she has the same discussion with me about it, the tourist version and the reality of this stuff. And I was like, oh, don't tell me that.
Yeah, no, but I don't see it now. I think, because it is very, very different to Margate, or Blackpool, I don't like either of them, to be honest. Right. I mean, I'm obviously proud to be from the northwest of England, but we went for a weekend trip to Margate, having never been, and I just went, no, this is just really bleak.
It's been on the up and up for as long as I've been down it. People are like...
You've been saying that for
years. And I'm at an age now, terrible thing to say, but I don't want to wait anymore.
No.
Do you know what I mean? I'm heading towards 50 now. And I can't wait 10 years for something to come up. We all did that in the 20s, living in shit areas on the off chance. Nah.
No.
I'm going to try and live in another life.
We're more or less the same age, and I completely agree with you. Yeah. But I think age does come into it when you're looking at somewhere like this. Because before we started recording, we were saying in my 20s, probably you were the same. Mm. This wasn't for me.
No, 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 no.
Now it's like...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I did... When did I come in? Yeah, like, just as I was turning 40, I think. So the timing was spot on, you know?
That is spot on
timing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because, like, London and places like that, you kind of go, you're sacrificing a lot to be near stuff, if you know what I mean. Like, I don't know, parties or whatever. And I didn't really go to them that much in my 20s, and I'm definitely not doing it in my 40s. No. So why am I cooped up?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, no, well done for moving here.
Oh, thank you. And also very welcoming.
Yes, it is. It is. Absolutely. Everyone's very, you made a right decision.
Yeah. but not in a patronising way.
No.
And also people talk to you, but not in a nosy way.
No, right. It's like, they've nailed it.
Just they've absolutely nailed it. I don't know how they've done it, but I'm into it, and I'm here. It's good news.
You'll find yourself doing a very... So you're passing on. You'll pass on the vibe.
Don't want to pass it on too much.
Well, the other thing is we shouldn't be talking about it because I feel like you have to keep it a bit of a secret. You know how nice it is, don't it? You know what I mean? Like, we shouldn't, but you know what I mean. You're like, if everyone knew, why wouldn't everyone move?
Well, we should talk about podcasting first, I think.
Oh yes, okay, oh, cool.
Do you listen to a lot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very late adopter to podcasts, though, but my friend David was banging on about them for years. He did one years ago, and he was like, oh, I love them, love them. And my friend, another friend of mine had one, and I remember I was talking about him the other day. Like, I was just like, I didn't get it, you know, what the point of it was. And then my friend was banging on about doing one, and then I started listening to them, and they are such a staple of my life now. There's sort of, not addiction, not the right word, but like if I find it hard to start new ones because I think you kind of fall in love with the hosts and or whatever they are, and and they become very personal to you, and it's like getting a new friend or something. So I don't invest easily in new ones, but the ones I have in my life, I'm very, very loyal to. And if I haven't, if those sort of four or five that I sort of float between, if there's not a new one, I'm a bit bereft. I'm like, oh God, I do need something, because I'm going to go for a run, or I'm in the car, and there's a few I listen to if I'm going to, you know, if I'm tired, and I'm,
yeah.
And I hope that's not insulting. You know, when you go,
I know what you mean.
Some of them I'm like, I just find peaceful, and some of them aren't important what they talk about in a nicest possible way. So if I don't hear the whole ep, it doesn't matter. And some I'm precious about, and I have to hear every single word. But some of them, like, oh, I fell asleep halfway through that one, but it's all right. Because I listen to quite a few football ones.
Yeah.
And that, with the best will in the world, there, you know, if I don't get to the end of what happened at Old Trafford on Sunday or whatever, it's not the end of the world. So, yeah, I am, yeah, I'm very big in them now.
There is a lot of rubbish out there.
Yeah. I like to add, I think we've added to the bottom.
Do you enjoy making them though as well? Because every time, because I always get a sense that you and David really enjoy talking to each other.
Yeah,
really
yeah,
enjoy yeah. the guests, and there's some incredible little formats on there with the surprise guests.
Oh yes, yes,
which are brilliant. It's a lovely thing.
Oh, thank you. Oh yeah, love it. It's What do we struggle with? I think we struggle with the fact that we do enjoy it so much, because, like most people, you know, we've worked in lots of jobs, and most of our life was not doing what we loved, if you know.
Mm.
And even like when we start comedy, there's a lot of struggle with it, and there's a lot of toiling and a lot of knocking your pan out, or, you know, really having to graft at something, you know, working two jobs and all this kind of stuff, like everyone did. And then to just do something you just utterly, utterly enjoy comes with a little bit of guilt, I think.
Yeah.
And it's a really weird thing to say. And I think when we're just chatting, we sort of go, I love it. Is it right? Is that all right? And I feel like sometimes we go, should we do something painful in the afternoon? Because I really enjoy that. do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like if we just do a couple of podcasts and then I don't do anything in the afternoon, I do feel guilty, like I've taken the day off because we've just chatted or met a pilot or something, you know. And I'm like, well, that was just great fun. Why that's not work. We always say this isn't bloody work and this is embarrassing.
But of course it is.
It yeah. is, yeah, but it just doesn't feel like it.
No, of course it doesn't.
No.
But then again, and I don't know what it's like to be on stage as a comedian, but I know what it's like, you know, to hear action and the cameras are rolling.
Mm.
And then at the end of the day you go, I really enjoyed myself. Mm. That was brilliant. I can't believe I do this for
Oh yeah.
So there's a sense of guilt there for doing what love, because you know, how many times do you speak to people and you go, I just don't like my job?
Oh, I'd say it's 90% of people.
Yeah, I would say so.
Because I did that for you. Like, I also thought, I remember, like, because I had lots of proper jobs and stuff, and I think it's really healthy, actually. Like, it does give me an appreciation of everything else I've done. Everything else, I've done loads of stuff, but you know what I mean? And I forgot my point, but basically, I think kind of, I have always sort of struggled with the fact that it is, you know, playing and stuff. And I thought in my old jobs, I did enjoy them, but I was not kidding myself. But I was like, I enjoyed them as much as you can because it's a job. Because I like most people, I brought up, you know, you really are just. Putting a roof over your head, really. You know what I mean? That's essentially what you do. So if it's not really shit, that's amazing.
Mm.
So I was in, like, I was doing a sort of semi-creative job. So I was like, well, that's pretty cool. You know, like, it's not, I'm not down a mine, you know. So
is that when you started comedy? Or
no, like my old job, I worked in advertising, basically. Right. And I look at it now and I go, I didn't enjoy it. I just enjoyed it in the context of what it was. You know what I mean? As in, I'd worked quite hard to get a job that was less shit than I'd done other jobs, if you know what I mean. So I was like, fucking, this is great. And then I opened Pandora's box and was like, oh, there's more to stuff you can do that you actually enjoy. And I was listening to Steve Coogan the other day, and he's like, well, I can't see myself. He's like, well, I don't, you know, he was talking about someone. I've just seen your Man Ray book. Sorry. I love Man Ray, sorry. He was talking about, like, his friend talking about retiring or counting down the years to retirement. And he's like, well, I don't think like that because I've got to, you know, he's got to do what he loves. So it's like retiring, you know, like I play five-a-side. It's like retiring from five-a-side. Oh, I love five-a-side. I'm thinking about when I can stop playing five-a-side. Yeah. I'm dreading when I have to, you know, my knees go. So it's true. I just think I do, but it's left us with a guilt of going, God, this is fun and cool. We're always talking about, like, this thing, like, we could do it, but we can't. We go, if we just did that and it covered all the bills, is that all right? And I go, well, I guess so, but...
But other people have to just really hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, exactly. I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago to somebody else, but we had to get up really early to go somewhere. I can't remember, but we were getting in the car at like 6 in the morning. You know what it's like now, it's all dark and everything. Mm. And my partner went, you know, this is what just like normal people have to do. And I took a little bit of offence by it. I went, well, I still have to get up very sort of concentrated amount of time.
Now, but I'm sort of with her, like, because I did it for a long time and I was out. It's just really similar happened to me a few weeks ago. I can't remember why I was out, but I was getting in the car at 7.
Mm.
And there's people, and it's not so much now since COVID, a lot more working from home. And I'm really pleased for a lot of people I know, like they're getting 10, 12, 14 hours back because not having to commute. There's just still a few people walking up my road towards the station at 7. And I was just like, shit, yeah, that was a big chunk of my life doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, every now and then those things reset me. And I go, oh, yeah, come on, Jay. It's all right, isn't it? But I don't know. I hope the guilt will go away. But I don't know. I think maybe as I get older, I'll go, yeah, it's all right. You've done your time.
Yeah, and also I think I could consider myself very lucky, I suppose.
Mm.
Especially doing this as a part of a career.
Yeah, mad, isn't it?
Well, it is mad. But then again, it's like I get to meet lovely people and I choose who I talk to and I'm learning off loads of people. It's really, I feel that's a really lucky thing I think I do.
The DIY element of it I love as well.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, as you know, like with loads of stuff you've done, like you've been part of big machines, haven't you? And you've been a cog with many other cogs and that is great, you know, but they're not agile things. You know what I mean? With this, the best way, this is great. We've had a cup of tea and we're sitting in your lounge chatting and there's been no, can you start now, guys? We've got 4 minutes or, you know, an hour and then Craig, you need to go over there. You know, there's none of that.
No.
And I'm very appreciative of all that stuff I've done, but I'm also very aware of how much I enjoy the stuff doing Chatterbix, just going, David's going, he's away at the moment, but he's back in a few days. And he might go, let's just record, I've got this idea, or what we didn't finish talking about that. Do you want to do that, I don't know, 9:30? And I go, yeah, go on then. And just have to turn my laptop on, everything's set up and ready to go. And I love that nimbleness and I like the lack of someone sort of saying to me, have you thought of this and da, 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 or why don't you try it that way? Because that's great, but also sometimes that puts a little bit of doubt in your mind and, you know, you go, oh, is it right? Whereas we don't think like that at all. We go, we're making thousands of mistakes, but we haven't got a boss who goes,
yeah.
If we lost 2,000 listeners off the back of an app, it's only affecting us. And so I don't feel any sort of like angst about going, oh shit, we need to tell the production company that, you know, we've cocked up, whatever.
Yeah, because there's so many podcasters, you know, now that are like in-house and they've got their own studio and it's like you've got your slot and that's when you have to record. So that, like when we were chatting, it's like, should we do it in the morning? Yeah, what time? Well, I'm up early. We're all put, let's do it early doors.
Yeah, exactly. I love that element to it. And I feel those parts of my life, I'm trying to expand the kind of the nimbler stuff, the more DIY stuff. I'm not taking away from any of the experiences I've done, but, you know, I love going, and I'm doing a bit of stand-up again, and I guess for the same reason, I've written some stuff this week and I'm going to try it tonight, you know, I love that.
Well, I was going to ask, because is there and I don't know because I've never been on stage, but I'm fascinated with comedy and I love...
I saw you, because I was sat behind you at Stuart Lee, wasn't I?
Petra said that, was amazing.
What chances of the...
And what a venue to see him. Yeah, the Dome's amazing. I've seen him in loads of venues.
Yeah, I've seen him in many ways, I've seen him quite a few times in the Dome. It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a cracking venue.
And it was a great show.
Yeah, of course
it was. I mean, of course, without a doubt, obviously.
Yeah.
But is there a certain DIY element that we have doing what we're doing here to stand up?
No.
In a sense that you are your own boss.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there is. Yeah, yeah. Oh, definitely. Like, I have a love-hate relationship with it, but I think the reason I'm coming back to it is because there's no machine again. You know, there's no sort of asking for permission or whatever. Mm. You know what I mean? You go... You know, like if you're trying to get a TV show away, there's so many layers to it, and I think we've been very lucky. We've got, you know, we've made some shows, and I love it, and I still want to do that, but I think it's a lot of waiting game. It's a waiting game sometimes. You know, you put stuff out into the ether, and I love the creative side of writing a script or me and David come up with shows, and I love it, but if I just did that, you'd be sitting on your hands a lot, and I don't like sitting on my hands, basically, because I there's an element of me which sees myself as a freelancer rather than a creative person who, you know what I mean? So I go, well, if I just wait, then nothing might happen. Whereas if I can be doing something that I'm the engine to, you know what I mean, and the only engine, then I feel safer, really. And that's why I love the DIY stuff. And I feel like this is a really exciting time, especially for younger people getting into it. I'm almost jealous of the timing of my, you know, like where you go, well, there's this opportunity to... So you might not be someone who wants to get on stage, which is me, really. Like, if there would have been another option, like, I probably wouldn't... If there had been the stuff now, it was probably very unlikely I would have done stand-up.
So what drew you to it in the first place?
Because I love comedy, basically. Yeah. And
I love comedy. I love the mechanics of it. I couldn't do that.
Well, no, I couldn't, really. But
you
I did.
Can.
Well, through lots of trial and error, but it was my only way in. Like, because is anyone sort of from... any sort of theatrical background in your life?
In my family?
Yeah.
No. Not at all.
No, nor me. So maybe you probably had a bit more about you than me, because I was like, it just didn't feel like an option. Not that anyone said you can't do that, but just like it seemed a mad choice, you know. I remember one kid at my school, I think, got into drama school, I think, and had like it was like a... I don't remember thinking it being inspiring me or anything, because I didn't know I wanted to do anything, really. I just thought it was fucking weird. I was like, what's he doing? Oh, weird, isn't it? Like, and sort of like, well, where'd he go about that? And like, he was sort of, I remember sort of thinking he was a bit of an alien, you know what I mean? Like, what the fucking hell is that kid doing? And I remember going, well, fair enough. Not like going, like dismissive of his efforts or whatever. I was just like, saying someone's going into the army or something. Not my, you know, not something I thought about. So me and my brother were obsessed with comedy, and I was getting older thinking, oh, what a, you know, that's just the only way to sort of touch it, I guess, was to do a bit of stand-up.
Did you feel that internally you had something to prove to yourself to get up and do it? Or was that sort of niggling feeling?
Yeah, I guess so. It's not something I probably would have admitted to myself, I think. But yeah, I guess so. Like, what was it? There was no career path thing. It was just like, I wonder if I could be funny. And then it was always going to be a one-off. It was always one-off. There was no plan, if you know what I mean. I was like, it was an open mic spot place in South London that I was going to every week and watching. And I became friends with the guy that ran it. Mm. God rest his soul, a guy called Ed. Lovely, lovely man. Most miserable man. So I loved him, but he was... He would start the gig by saying something like, has everyone paid? And have you been before? And if they said no, he'd go, good. Because basically say these nights aren't great. but I went for about a year just watching, and he said to me one time, and I do, you know, I don't think I ever thanked him, which is terrible, but he said, do you want to have a go? And I sort of went, yeah. And because I don't think I'd ever have asked. I wouldn't have ever have had the courage to say, I'd like to have a go. It's just not in me. And he said, look, I'll put you in for January or whatever. And I think it was September or something like that.
Right.
And that's how it began. And then I wasn't aware that... And then I met lots of people that told me about the Edinburgh Festival. And I remember hearing... someone talk about, like, the footlights, and I remember calling it the floodlights for ages. Like, but I was amazed. I was meeting people that had been to, like, you know, Cambridge and had found out that there was this thing they did, and there was this sort of, and then I sort of would read all about, and I was like, oh God, there's this sort of path. And I remember thinking, how do these people know? How do they know that? Not that I could have gone to Cambridge, don't get me wrong, but they went, I'll go to Cambridge and I'll study history, but I'll do this thing, which is just like, I don't even, it's just like a society, isn't it, really? It's not even like a course or anything. They're just...
No, I think, from what I know, it's just like an offset, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's a little gang of them, and they make Edinburgh shows, and they all seem to go on and...
be amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, oh, so that they all knew about that. So I met all these different types of people, and then everyone I met would tell me something else that you can do. And, you know, and then I met, like, Diane Morgan, who was an actor.
Yeah, how did you meet Diane?
On the tube. On the way here, Wynn. On the circuit. She was doing stand-up, but she... So we started doing stuff together, and she sort of like talked me about like kind of committing to stuff. And so I was like, okay. And then I found out, like, because I guess my way of doing stuff was sort of preservation.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Try and make a tit of yourself as possible. But then she taught me, like, if you go like 130%, you're sort of dying on your own terms and all these sort of things. So I met lots and lots of people. I'm not saying people shouldn't go to drama school or whatever, but I felt like I was getting all this sort of stuff from people like at a million miles an hour, you know what I mean? Like people going, now this is what you actually need to know, you know, and, you know, this will help rather than, I don't know what a drama school.
I'm sure you're just constantly gaining that knowledge.
Yeah,
probably.
I don't know about yourself, but I feel like every time I do something, I go, oh, fucking hell, here we go, how do we do this? And
well, that's why, you know, we touched about talking about retiring not so long ago. It's like, why would I retire when I'm I don't want to be like a cliche, but it's a brand new adventure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gaining loads of knowledge and learning.
No, 100%.
So why would I bother? Why would I sack it all in?
No, I'm enjoying learning this thing. Yeah, and I've been really lucky with You know, like I have got to do lots of different things, which I think is really, really amazing. You know, like this or acting or writing or whatever, and it's just been, like you say, like hopefully not too much of a jam, but you know what I mean? Like, it's just been like, once you get in to this world and people, you start to meet lots of people, they sort of, I don't know, because you sort of come up together, they go, oh, I'm doing this thing, do you want to do a little thing in this? And then suddenly you're sort of acting or you're I'm doing a podcast or whatever. And it all just seems like one big happy accident to me, really.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I'm very, again, very appreciative of. But
I mean, it's one thing getting up on stage as a solo artist, as a comedian, but then it's completely different kettle of fish working with somebody else.
Mm.
How did you feel that that was going to go with Diane when you started working together? Was it...
The main thing I think about something like that is we had a lot of, like, it's so hard to do. The reason you can do it is because essentially no one's employing you.
Mm.
So you can invest so much time in it. And these things are always destined to die in the nicest possible way, because you're either going to get no interest and you're just going, well, this is mental. Why are we still doing this? Or you start getting work and you haven't got time to do it.
Mm.
So it's only when I look back and go, oh, yeah, like you just, it's unsustainable, because we would just be out every night trying stuff. And we had a weird philosophy of going, because we always did Edinburgh festivals. We never did old material. It's mad when I think about it now. But we would go to gigs and just try 3-4 new sketches or whatever, and we didn't have any, that's all we knew, because we had to create like, well, an hour bless you,
excuse me,
no, not to, we had to create an hour, which is actually sort of creating 3 hours, isn't it, really? And then kind of, so you've only got a certain amount of months in the year, so we would just, every time we went out, we'd just try 3 or 4 stuff, you know, bits, and then some of it would work, some of it would work. And then it was just, our job was just create, you know, just collecting material, basically. So we had this really good work ethic and stuff together. And, and then we did these end of the shows. And then, you know, Diane, I assume what I was saying, but was sort of overlooked for years. And this was the time when, it's such a weird time, because people were like, we're looking for ladies now. It's such a weird time.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, you aren't. You are. But you're saying, it's like peace, you know, you're sort of saying it, but you're not really. And I'm like, well, if you are, then Diane's like, she's right there.
Yeah.
And amazing. And they, and then so she was, I'm sure she won't mind what I'm saying, but sort of overlooked for years. And then, I guess my frustration is like everyone's now going, she's amazing. I go, yeah, well, she's amazing.
Yeah, we knew that years ago.
But I don't know. It was just, we just both had, we were younger and passionate about kind of trying to, I guess in a horrible way, show people that we were shit.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
I was up at Edinburgh this year.
How were you?
I was seeing some friends and I was just doing some recordings, and I was quite overwhelmed by the amount of shows.
I think it's small. The amount of shows is still enormous. Yeah, I think the audiences were down this year, but I can't go back. I've got PTSD from the thing.
I was going to say, because I know a few stand-ups who are friends. One of them absolutely loves it and thrives off the festival.
Wow.
And I know he really looks after himself and just goes there.
He
loves it.
Yeah.
And he's got quite a nice profile, so he gets the audience.
Yeah, quite.
And I've got other friends who go, no, I will never go back. Yeah, I feel that, I've done my time.
Yeah, that's me.
And then there's other people, when I was looking at posters and I was going, how are you getting an audience?
Oh, it's...
Because so many... Like, Frank Skinner was going in for like two nights. You know, people with huge, huge profiles who will get audiences, no problem. But what about the people with no profile who've worked really hard?
It's a tricky one because I'm always... Like, I'm like you. I was like, do you need to do two nights? But then someone said, if you get the higher profile people, then it does attract people to the festival. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So they go and see Frank Skinner and five other shows or whatever. But when we went, we never really got momentum in Edinburgh because, like, I really... I don't know how to say this without sounding bitter, but like some people just like the festival just seems to get behind them, and I don't know what that means. But suddenly you go, "Who's that? That person? I don't know. They're selling out or whatever." You know, there's something happens, or the right person. I wasn't even tweeting then. Says something. I don't know. And we just always struggled, and everyone was sort of going, "Well, you're quite an Edinburgh act," and it just never really took off for us. But saying that, like, stuff come off the back of it, we just never got an audience,
right?
And so you're sort of talking to the wrong person about how you get an audience, because I never did. But some people just like, with going less time than us would be in the, but then people would be like doing their first show and going for, because we would have like 50-seater rooms, sort of that sort of size. But people would be getting like, they'd book a 100-seater room and sell it out, and having never done it, I'm like, what do you know that I don't?
Yeah. What's the secret formula?
Yeah, because this isn't like, you haven't even been up the festival long enough to have got word of mouth. You know what I mean?
It's not Jerry Sadowitz.
No. But it's weird. I never really nailed Edinburgh. I was always... like an unwieldy beast to me. And so like every now and then I go, oh, maybe I should go back and have a look at, you know, just as a punter.
Mm. Do you go back as a punter now?
No, I can't. No, I can't. No, it's just like even Edinburgh's slightly ruined for me out of festival season. Yeah, because of the, my friend always says the worst sound in the world is your is your suitcase handle coming up in Waverley Station.
With the drag.
As you drag it towards the cab rank. I was like, I think he's probably nailed it. So, yeah, Greg Davis said something to me once. He said, and he's not a boastful man. He's a very humble man. He sort of did one Edinburgh, basically. Mm. And he goes, he sold out every run, every night. He got only good reviews. He got nominated for the Perrier and he hated every second of it. I was like, oh, that's a pretty good way of summing up for some people's experience.
Yeah, because even as a punter, I was up there 48 hours and I tried to see as much as I could, but you've got to be healthy.
Yeah, it's overwhelming, isn't it?
So to go on stage every night, because I was talking to somebody the other day about theatre, and I don't really do a lot of theatre at all. And some people who aren't in this profession would go, oh, but you're only doing like 2 hours a night.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, but it's the build-up. You get up in the morning and you're constantly thinking about it. Your brain's whirling. Yeah, I'm sure it's probably the same when you've got like a 2:30 show at Edinburgh and everything's geared to all that. And then after it, you're just replaying the shit that went wrong.
I think the one thing I would like advise someone if they were doing it is because, like, no, I'm not slagging anyone off who put shows on, but like I the first year I did it was like in this package show and it was on really late. So I was really inexperienced. I was doing like a late night show, which was not so, it was in a room was too big, but it was on late. So I think it was on like maybe 10:45. So you don't, excuse me, you only really come down, as in start to relax, at midnight. Whereas if I did like a 1 o'clock in the afternoon show, the build up is 5 hours rather than 12 hours, if you know what I mean. And that started me in a bad sort of pathway of Edinburgh, really. And then I think the next year I did like maybe 9 o'clock. Whereas now, and then at the end, I think the last show was at 4. I would never do like a later show now. I'd just do 4, 3, something like that. And also probably mentally now I'm probably more, like I did an hour a few months ago, then I couldn't do another one. But I was like, I was mentally much more fine about it anyway. But it's just giving yourself time where you're not kind of stressing about the thing. And if that's like some part of my brain allows me to switch off after the show and not think about the tomorrow's show until the next morning, if you know what I mean. So, and I did the show with one lad in the first year, the package show thing, and he wasn't really coping. And then it became this sort of really unhealthy sort of, he wasn't really eating the day, and then he was sort of drinking quite a lot afterwards. And, you know, and I think a lot of people go down that route, and then it just, because I never really, even when I used to drink, I never drink in Edinburgh, really.
I don't know how you could sustain.
No, it's just, you're dying.
Anything.
You eat bad food and stuff out there. So I think Nick Mohammed said this to me. You eat really bad food and you drink and stuff and you lose weight. That's how stressful.
Through worry.
Yeah, that's how stressful Edinburgh is. But anyway, I think if people are going, I'm sorry if that's, if you listen to this going, oh, I think it'll go.
But it is quite an attractive prospect to go as a punter. I do like going back purely, like I saw Daniel Kitson's new show this year.
Oh yeah, great.
And I hadn't seen him for ages. And even just seeing that one show,
it was worth
kind
it,
of made it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's an amazing thing. I just think I wish I'd approached it differently. You know, I just, like, it's, you know, it got me to the next rung, if that's a way of putting it. You know, like, I've got, you know, people go, oh, you exist and all that kind of stuff. So, and I was listening to something the other day about rites of passage of kind of, like, people talking about, like, doing, like stand up as all the little clubs, and some people sort of miss out these things and miss out Edinburgh, and it happens a different way. And whoever I was listening to basically said, again, kind of what we were talking about earlier about, like, do I deserve stuff? Yeah. The fact that some of probably people of my generation kind of get annoyed at people that haven't had to go through. And this person, I think it was Stuart Goldsmith on his podcast, said, good luck to them. Like, if you haven't had to kind of traumatise yourself in the process, that's great. Why do you have to be traumatised and go through hell to get something? You know, that's what I feel now, where I'm like, if I could have done it a different way and probably had.
But surely it is a different, there are loads of different avenues now because social media wasn't around, you know, going back all those years. So there wasn't that self-promotion.
No.
But then again, you know, it's one thing creating a, you know, a 2 minute.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, viral sensation to an hour show.
Well, yeah, I totally agree. And I also go, if, I don't know, there's someone like Josh Pugh who's brilliant, but he's got a great brain, and his brain just, he's like, it's different muscles of his brain. You know, he does these very funny, like, character things, and then he's got great stand up and does great hours and stuff. Yeah. So I think it's just not being like a one trick pony.
Yeah.
But I started doing stand up again maybe a year and a half ago.
What pulled you back?
Just, I think basically I'd just done a project which was kind of like a long process, and then it got cancelled, which is, you know, part of the job and stuff. But it's such an, like, when you've made a TV show, it's such a big event, it's such a big effort, and then it gets cancelled, and rightly so, things always get cancelled. But then I was like, God, if we start another one of those, that's a big...
It's a huge commitment.
Yeah.
You're building it from the ground
up. Yeah, because you're creating a world and you don't know anything. It's so weird when you think, okay, you know, have to magic characters and storylines.
Yeah.
Really?
And that sounds like work.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of work. I guess we just come to the end of this thing, and I was like, well, I'll maybe do something immediate. And I went to this, I did this gig in my friend Matt's gig in Oxfordshire.
As a drop-in, like as a 20-minute set?
Yeah. And so it was like a couple of other acts and me, and we're chatting, and they're both really lovely younger people. And they were talking about like stand-up is really hard, and it's like takes real effort and thought and stuff. But they were chatting, and they're both lovely, as I say, but they were talking about all these other things they had to think about as well. Like one of them was saying, their agent was saying, you've got to have a online presence or have a thing that people can hook into, all this sort of stuff. And I was just like going, oh no, it's actually too much to think about. It's like do one of them well. It was what I was thinking in my head, and it's none of my business. But there was like, they were sort of having to take on all this different stuff. And I was like, oh, you got a gig in 20 minutes. Like, that's hard enough.
Yeah.
Like, but you're thinking, I've got to have this, I don't know, got to create a character, which I don't believe anyway, because I think if everyone's doing that, do something else, basically. Sorry.
Yeah, and also, you know, we don't have to go back through stand-up history, even when, you know, the social media is so prevalent, but there's loads of amazing comedians that me, you, and people listening to this will know that don't touch social media, don't go anywhere near it.
Of course, yeah, exactly. I'm not saying don't listen to your agent, but I think it's sort of pick and choose what you listen to.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just thinking, how are you doing? How is your brain? Like, you've got too much to worry about. You're 3 years in or 4 years in or whatever. How are you meant to? I just felt like saying, what do you want to do? Do you know what I mean? Do you want to do online characters or whatever?
Yeah.
Because if you don't, why are you doing it? Like, don't mean anything. But if you want to, great. If you want to make, you know, people make successful careers now out of doing characters or whatever online. But if it's your passion, great. But if it's not, don't, because you're just wasting a year or whatever, because you're going, it'll probably be shit. Because you're not thinking about it every day.
And of course, you can't put 100% into one thing when you're trying to split yourself into
Those
different sections and go, well, I'll try and do a bit of online
stuff. That's what it felt like was happening in this conversation. And obviously then I'm like, fucking hell, you're 48. What do you know? You know what I mean? So I didn't say anything, obviously, because it's none of my business anyway.
Yeah.
And as I say, they're really lovely, but I was just like, I was just imagining being them going, what? Hold on, that's hard. That's hard as well. I can't do all of this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think I can do one of them very well at the moment at all anyway, because I've only been going 4 years.
Yeah.
And also, like, there's this other thing where people are kind of getting, like, a big profile and then maybe kind of being, I don't know, thrown into, like then doing a tour and... That must be really scary if you haven't done a lot of stand-up, you know, and stuff. I don't know. It's just, I just do think, especially nowadays with mental health stuff, but I never thought of it as mental health.
Around then, was it?
No. We just say fucking scary.
Yeah.
But like, they must be going, fuck, I've got this opportunity. I've got then, no, maybe their agent, and right, so it's a job or whatever, going, we can sell out a tour. But that could be really detrimental to you if you do a tour when you're maybe not ready and you don't enjoy it and you may never do it again. Whereas if you did a bit later and you loved it and you're good at it, and then you could do 10 of them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You could do it for the rest of your adult life. You know what I mean? It's like, you can do that in your 60s. You know, tell me if you want it, if you love it. Don't know. It's just like, I don't know what I think half the time because I am aware of my age as well. Do you know what I mean? And I don't want to be that person going, we did it that way. So I'm not saying that's right. I just do go, God, it just seems a little bit overwhelming now to me. But that might be my age as well.
Also, you've got to find in anything, in any sort of, any of the creative arts, what works for you.
Yeah.
What one works, one way might work for them and it won't work for you. So well, regardless of age.
Yeah, definitely. I'm probably the wrong person to quote nowadays, but Graham Linehan said, if everyone's talking about sitcom stuff, and I think it's the best, one of the best bits of advice I've heard. If everyone's doing sitcoms about, I don't know, single camera, melancholy sort of stuff, do big, silly studio ideas because they've got those.
Yeah.
And everything's circular. So they'll think that's what they want for eternity, but they won't. And you'll be right in one of those and you'll be behind the curve. So if everyone's doing short characters online, it's going to take you a couple of years to think of something good. So don't do that.
Yeah.
By the time you've got a good one of those, it'll be gone and it'll be something else. So start thinking about something.
Right, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you remember when, of course, you remember when, like, The Office sort of completely blew up? And then there was lots of people doing that style all the time.
Yeah.
And it was just direct copying. And they all said, oh, it's naturalistic. It's not naturalistic at all. It's a certain style. It's the style of The Office.
Yeah, yeah.
Loads of people were adopting that.
Yeah. I what's the example? Oh, yeah. Do you remember? Someone told me this. Someone, I can't remember who, but do you remember the, what's it called? It was about sort of late 20s people living in a flat share. They all had, like, they're all lawyers or something in a big house. It was like
This Life.
Yeah. So so I don't know if it was BBC or ITV or whoever had it. They were saying
BBC.
Yeah. So ITV and Channel 4 or whoever the channels were was saying, we want our version of that. And everyone was writing that stuff. And there was a sort of plethora of, like, bad versions of it that came out. And because the audience were, like, subconsciously going, well, I've got that. I don't want that.
Yeah.
Like, why are you doing a... They didn't know they were thinking that because no one thinks about it as much as the channels or the writers or whatever. But they were, like, going, I've sort of seen that, so I'm not interested.
And I've seen a really good version.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, what a weird sort of going, we need our you don't.
Yeah.
You really don't. You need to be making the thing that everyone then tries to copy.
I remember seeing a character breakdown, and it was around the time of The Office for something, I can't fucking remember what it was. And it said, like, the character's name and age and all that, and then in brackets it went, think Tim from The Office. And it was just like all...
Apparently there was 5 years of that, and there's a famous one of, I can't remember... the name of the actor who played Dawn. She's brilliant. She was in something I saw the other day. She was amazing. Have you seen the thing she's in called, is it called Better Things? It's an American thing.
I'm way behind on that, but I've started it. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Pamela.
Yes. Oh, fucking hell. She's brilliant in it.
Yes, she is amazing.
I think she's like the best thing in it. She's so funny. Anyway, but apparently she got an audition that said, think Dawn from The Office. This is the myth. And she didn't get the part.
Yeah. I've heard that. And I think it's probably true.
Well, I think I've nailed Dawn from The Office. Fucking hell.
How long did it take you as a stand-up to create that persona? Because I've always thought there's something very vulnerable about getting on stage with a mic. So did you feel there was a bit of safety in creating a character?
Yeah, 100%, yeah. Yeah, 1,000,000%. So someone asked me about it the other day, did this book signing thing, and I was like, yeah, it's exactly that. It's protection and it's...
Sorry, I'm asking boring questions.
No. God, no, it's just funny, like I spoke about it with this guy because he was... I think he's thinking about doing it. And I was like, yeah, it was definitely. And I also, It started off a protection thing, but then it also became like a way that I could write, because I created this sort of lunatic who, my friend summed it up. It was like, he said, it's like doing observational comedy from the point of view that there is absolutely no relatability. And I thought that was quite a good way of summing it up. So it was a way of me kind of being able to kind of write anything from this one point of view, basically. I just like having a point of view that I can write about anything, and it's just, I don't have to find, it's got its own sort of truth, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And that's the side of it. I love writing the stuff more than, as I say, I don't think I'm naturally drawn to performing, but I really love the fact that I've come up with allows me to write, not easy, it's fucking odd, but like, I think sometimes having an angle, a character that has a definite angle, you know, like the completely sort of, you know, what do you call it? Like the, what's the thing? Not the false author, the unreliable author kind of thing.
Mm.
That's really what it is, really. So this person's telling you this thing, wholeheartedly believing that he sees the world like everyone else, but that just doesn't. It's as simple as that. But it was all an accident.
Yeah,
yeah. So
no. I almost feel like he's been sort of dropped in from another time,
yeah,
and another place altogether that we've never been to.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But he's got his truth.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and that is because people say it's like, like always write the truth and stuff, and I agree, but the truth doesn't have to be, it's that person's truth, if you know what I mean.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, I'm still doing it because I, you know, I inhabit it quite easily, you know, like this is the way. I'm currently writing about kind of this person owning a snake and walking about. I just saw a video of someone walking around LA with a snake, you know, like, and I just thought, oh, this person would see that as like unbelievably like not weird, basically.
It's almost inspiring.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So I'm sort of writing about that. So the truth of that is like, it's about how cool it is to sort of walk around with a big snake, basically. It just makes me laugh. You go, if that person, like, we all know that that's an odd thing to do. So it's really easy to write, well, if he doesn't think that's an odd thing to do, you've got the start of the, hopefully something funny.
And there's mileage there.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So that's currently what
I suppose if you like the writing process, then not saying that it's plain sailing from there, but the fact that you really enjoy it. Because I was talking to Reese Shearsmith about writing. He doesn't like writing Inside Number 9 at all. He finds it a real chore.
Wow.
He doesn't get pleasure from it. Whereas Steve Pemberton absolutely loves that
Does
part
he?
Of the process.
Oh, that must be so hard, man. For me, if I've just got to write, it's like a day off. It's like like Petra, my half, like she said, look, if I've worked over the weekend or whatever, she'd go, let's just don't do anything on Monday. And I go, no, I'll just do some writing. And she's like, good, good. Yeah, because she knows it's sort of like, it doesn't, if I'm writing with no pressure, you know what I mean? I haven't got to finish something by the end of the day or end of the week or whatever. Yeah, for me, it's just like, it's just fun. And I can't remember who I was listening to say that they can't write and stuff. They like performing and stuff. I was like, fuck, I can't get my head around that. Because I'm like, it has to then exist somewhere, which is a shame.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm like, oh, yeah, just coming up with nice ideas. I do have a fancy of writing for someone, like giving over the material to someone and letting them kind of bring it to life.
Interpret it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's what I've learned with like working with actors and stuff. When you meet really good actors and they do that thing where you go, fuck, I wouldn't have done it like that. It's amazing. So weird where you go, oh, it's gone 20% better, 30% better than we could have imagined. I find that really amazing. And I think, yeah, if we could just give it someone and then they just made it even better, you'd be like, oh, that would be the dream.
Yeah, I've been in situations where I've been in a scene with somebody and it's completely taken me out of the scene because I'm just watching what they're doing and going, yeah. Oh, my God, I would never have done that. Amazing. Yeah. That's fucking brilliant.
I think that's it's the same with, like, directors and stuff. I can see why people use, like, you know, teams, a lot of people the same people when you trust them and stuff. Like if working with a good director, really good director, and then you sort of see the end thing and you go, oh, fucking hell, yeah, I wouldn't have done it like that. That's clever. I just like that idea of, I don't think I'd ever direct because I like handing over now. I like, it's a thing that's come with age, I guess, as well. Like, you know, when people, I think it's really unhealthy when people don't want to collaborate because no one's good enough to do it all. No one. So
I think it should always be about collaboration. Yeah. I don't like working with directors who don't want to collaborate or writers. I think everybody's part of a little cog in a massive machine. But if you just work.
Yeah, if you trust everyone.
Yeah.
Then, like, why wouldn't you? I just find, and I do think, like, there is a point when I was younger where you sort of, you don't want to admit it, but you go, I think I'll have to do, you know, and then I can do that, you know, and you go, you can't. Like, there's really good people. You just got to find them.
Oh, it's like when I was younger, and if there was even a little stunt, I'd be like, I'll do the stunt. I'll do the stunt. And now I'm like, fucking kidding me. Yeah. No, there's a highly trained stunt professional who will do that. And when you watch it on the telly, it will definitely look like me. It's not a problem. And I'm not going to hurt myself.
I don't think I'd ever thought, not that I've done a stunt. I don't think I would have ever throw me down those stairs.
The arrogance of you.
Fair play. That's why you're in bits now.
Exactly.
Throwing down the stairs too many times.
When you took that character to panel shows,
yeah,
were you given enough? Because you had that freedom on stage.
Yeah.
Was the freedom there?
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
Because when you look back at those, it does look like it.
Yeah, like I always credit like Zeppachon who I did Countdown with because I don't know, like that platform was I was so lucky that they just basically said come on the show and have like a 10-minute slot every week, and they just were basically to do whatever you want.
Wow. Really.
And to the point where they would facilitate it above and beyond. They were like, they're like the dream production company. And I think what they do well, and I've worked with other people who don't do it, and I forget because I'm like, oh, fuck, right. No, they're very trusting of people doing, again, what we're talking about, doing their bit.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we know how to do our bit, but we don't know how to do your bit. So you're in charge of your bit and we're in charge of our bit, and there's lots of crossovers. But when it comes to, like, decisions, creative decisions on your bit, you're in charge, and creative decisions on our bit, we're in charge. And so they just had this sort of amazing sort of... I was talking about this thing where I had this thing where I was a magician and I was going to come out of a bag... Like, to do like a Houdini underwater in a bag thing. And I had this idea and I sent it to them and they were like, oh, yeah, we love it, you know. And I found out that, like, a couple of years later that they had to because what water in studios is just like a massive no-no.
Yeah.
So they had to rewire the whole studio. So there was no wire within, I don't know, 40 feet of the water.
Wow.
And they were there like days before, didn't tell me any of this, just rewired the whole thing so I could do this one joke, basically. And that tells you what they're like to work with.
Yeah.
They were just like...
That speaks volumes. Wow.
I don't think there's anything that they didn't make work in some way. Because there's so obviously some stuff they're like, you know, that's going to be £50,000.
Yeah.
And also what was interesting is when they said something couldn't quite do, I completely trusted them that they weren't just taking a shortcut. So I would then rewrite it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I knew that they would have sat in a room, been on the phone to everyone in the country that they could speak to try and make this happen. And if they come back to me and say, we just can't make this happen, it's just not possible, then, again, going back to trust, you just go, well, we'll rewrite it then. Whereas because they made so much stuff work for me. And I don't think I realised at the time how lucky I was in that situation, just having this sort of showcase thing that I could just do all these stupid ideas on. And I was like, who gets that sort of chance to do it? And especially working with someone so diligent and open to all these stupid ideas. It's like, it's a one-off, really.
Did you enjoy the studio format as opposed to the stand-up, like with the audience there?
Well,
there's an element in the
yeah. It's still alive.
Yeah,
but like I've also learned over the year. Like I was very, and again, I appreciate. You know, looking back, I was like, oh, fucking hell, they must have been like, Jesus, because I wanted to do it all, like live with no kind of reset. You know, or like sometimes you could do half of the setup and then reposition. Blah, blah, blah. So, but I wanted it all. To work in the room because that was all I knew. But now as a bit older, I'm aware of kind of going, well, just pausing the thing and then... But they would work around the fact that I had that anxiety of, like, losing momentum and stuff. But now
you've got so much experience.
Yeah, exactly.
You know how the mechanics of it all work.
Yeah, exactly, and it all edit down. But I just knew sort of live. So... I was like, well, if we pause there and reset, we'll lose momentum and blah, blah. So they were, again, working with someone quite inexperienced who, that was my anxiety, so they made it work that we didn't have to have that pause. But now, obviously, being older and stuff, I like, oh, we'll reposition for that. And I'll go, yeah, fine. Makes a lot of sense. So it's just stuff like that, just going, rather than go, well, this is how telly's made, they would go, well, he doesn't feel comfortable doing it like that, so we'll work out how to do it like you wouldn't do it, you know.
I mean, that really does speak volumes because so many other people wouldn't do that.
No.
Actually, you're coming into our world now.
Yeah.
This is how it works, so
you need
to be the adaptable one.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And I guess then I wouldn't have coped with that maybe and it wouldn't have been as good and I wouldn't have, you know, done... 50, 60 of them, whatever we've done. And, well, they've done a lot more because the one thing was, like, the turnover of ideas was hard. It got harder. But going back to your point, yeah, they got, I guess, a lot more out of me as well, you know, because I was comfortable and got more confident and so on. But, you know, that, again, that's their experience. They're not a production company that saw the... short win, you know what I mean? They were like looking at it as a kind of ongoing thing. So, you know, I try and give them as much credit as possible now because now I'm aware of what they did. And I am, even though it was stressful and stuff and like hard work and probably looking back, I was like, God, could I do it again? Probably not. I'm now very, very, very appreciative of this opportunity that sort of changed everything for me, really. Because, you know, I got to just do a 10-minute thing every week. Fucking mad. But
as you said before, you know, who gets that showcase?
Just so rare.
Rarely, rarely happens.
Really, really weird. Like, no, I can't think of, and I don't mean it as in, like, it's a lot of luck and stuff, but I'm just thinking there's not many. You know, one other thing, I'll tell you what it reminds me of a bit of, is Tom Allen, Bake Off do this spin-off show, and Tom Allen, maybe it was started about 4 or 5 years ago, he is such a good improviser, like, with people, you know, like, and they had this thing on the show where he would just talk to the audience and ask them about their bakes, and it doesn't sound much, But he was so good at it, it just became this thing, that this sort of monster bit of the show. And he's been doing it 5 years. And it's a similar thing where it was just the right, a bit of luck, really showcased what he could do. And I think everything changed for him because they were like, God, this guy's so funny in the moment. And, like, I think it just went woof.
Yeah.
Because you just, a little bit of luck, you know.
It just takes one person to see and go, that's a thing and we can expand on
that. Yeah, yeah. Now I think he kind of co-hosts it with Joe Brand. But, yeah, it's just mad how you get, you do need a little bit of luck. Well, you need a massive amount of luck. I like, it always sounds like you're sort of being false modest or whatever, but you do. You need a massive amount. You need to take that bit of luck as well, but F me, you need a load of luck.
Yeah, totally.
You really do.
You mentioned before about how much you love the writing process.
Yeah.
But that's your stand-up, or that's the segments on there.
Mm.
What was it like heading into writing a book? Was it a different experience?
Okay, yeah, it was.
And tell me if you're sick of talking about it.
No, not at all. This has been great fun. I loved it because I got to work with Henry, and it was like another, because it's a comic book basically, and I don't know that world, and again, it was learning how to do that, and so it was like heaven for me. And then working with Henry, it was just like, oh God, I've not done this before. And again, I thought like, oh God, is this mental? I'm doing this because, like, you know, people do their whole, you know, that they work their whole lives to, you know, get to do a comic book, and then I'm learning on the fly. And I was like, oh right, like I wrote loads of stuff and then went back to it all, because by the end of sort of writing loads of stuff, I was like, oh no, that's how you do it,
right?
And so it's like it's sort of like the in a nutshell, I think what the way I think of it is, the less I write in the less I can write in the story that needs to be written, the better it is, if that makes sense. Because if the visual's doing most of the work, then that's a better way to represent the story. So I learned that very quickly. I was like, if it can be drawn, if you can see it rather than read it, then that's a better way of telling the story, which I learned through lots of mistakes and stuff. And again, I just love it because I was like, oh, I think that's how you do it. Oh, right, let's just... And then for me, I just like having, like, trying to think of stupid ideas that work in that format. And I, honestly, if they said do another one, I would jump at it.
Oh, would you?
I love it because it's talking to my missus about, like, that thrill of not quite knowing how to do something. Because... not that I've mastered anything, but you know when you've done something a few times, you're like, you don't, the not knowing how hard something is allows you to do it. Whereas if you've written, I don't know, a sitcom or something, you go, fucking hell, that's hard. But when you don't know, and I don't think I've quite got to the point with the comic books where you go, fucking hell, I've got to do another one. Where I was like, because I just feel like I've worked out, like I started to work out how to do it. So I'm excited to see what more I could come up with. So, yeah, I'd do it a drop of a hat. It's so much fun. And Henry Packer's got such an amazing brain. Again, talking about collaboration, I realised very quickly the less I suggested how it could be visually, the stronger it was. Because I'd sort of say, oh, what about if he, you know, and you can see this behind him a little bit. When I realised that his brain works visually, like, in such an amazing way, I was like, shut up. Just let the person who's been gifted with that type of brain do that. And again, I was just like, it's one of those things I felt most comfortable wanging on about, because I feel Henry's such a huge part of it. Like, the strength of it comes from him, I think.
Yeah.
So I find it much easier saying that I'm proud of it, because I feel involved, and it's sort of showcasing what Henry can really do, because It just, I had a lovely sort of year of just receiving his artwork and just going, okay, now, Jesus, what? It's really good. I'm going to add nothing to this. Why am I here? You don't need me, do you? So,
Joe, it's episodes like this that make me a bit sad that ending the podcast, because this has been absolutely lovely.
Well, thank you for having me.
Really loved it.
I love chatting, and thank you for inviting me to your beautiful home.
Thanks for coming.
Pleasure.
And another episode is done. As you can hear, I'm not on the beach anymore. I'm sat in my living room just looking at the Christmas tree. Quite nice. I didn't decorate it. That's not my skill set. And this is the first time in 6 years that this has ever happened. Producer Griff messaged me and he went, I've got no outro for Joe Wilkinson. I'd forgotten to record it. I think I'd blathered so much on the beach. And it was dark and I just simply forgot to record the address, so I'm recording it now from my slightly echoey living room. It's not as nice as it. Maybe I'll go down to the beach for the very last ever intro and outro, which is coming soon. But I'm really pleased that Joe came on. It was fantastic. I'm right, okay? I'm right of what I said at the end. That could have been one of the top fives over the years, and that's a lot to say considering the amount of people we have had. My God. If we were still recording the podcast, I would say that me and Joe will be speaking to you on Christmas Day when we jump in the sea. But I think by then, guys, I think we're going to be done. So there are two more episodes coming, as you heard. It's been impossible to fill that gap because of the time of year, and I understand, and inevitably it's always about timing with people. But fear not, a cracking penultimate coming up for you very, very soon. And then it's the special, the final ever Two Shot podcast after 6 years. I really hope you like it. Until then, I've been Craig Parkinson. He's been Producer Griff. And this has been the Two Shot podcast. Oh, my God. I can't believe I'm not going to say that anymore for a few. Oh, okay, I'm going to go. All right, thank you, bye.
The Two Shot Podcast was presented by me, Craig Parkinson, recorded and produced by Thomas Griffin for Splicing Block. The remix of our theme tune is by Stolen Valor. Cheers. At the fire.